You're listening to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch, with your host, Natalie Sedgwick. Hey, welcome to The Purple Mystic podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Patsy Cabot-Crutcher. Patsy, I believe you are a second degree Cabot witch from the Cabot Kent Hermetic Temple out of Salem, Massachusetts. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, when you did your classes with Lori Cabot, you did them online. You chose to do the online first and second degree. So yes. I want to talk with you a little bit about what that experience was like for you. And, you know, what you got from that, what you feel maybe you could have gotten, you know, or what you lost, basically, I guess, or didn't lose, but what you missed about not being able to do it in person. And then I thought from there we'd go on and talk a little bit about what it's like to be a member of a coven that's so far from where you live, because you live with me here in Texas, in North Texas, so you're some distance away from Salem.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. So let's start out with the online classes. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was absolutely wonderful. They were each, like Witchcraft 1 and Witchcraft 2 were both 4-night intensive classes. So I didn't feel that if I would have been a new witch that I would have been able to have done that. But I was an eclectic solitaire for many years. And the moment that I discovered Lori Cabot, I just was so drawn to her. I had not had a desire to be in a coven before that, because as you know, that's pretty hard in Texas, especially,
yeah,
you know.
Especially up here in the Bible Belt. I do want to talk about that, but I'm very curious about the online, because what you just said, 4-day intensive classes. So yes. When you sign up for this, I believe, not to make this a plug for Lori Cabot or anything, but I do believe she offers the Witchcraft 1 and Witchcraft 2 online for $800. Separately, they're $500 a piece, so you'd spend $1,000. So if you sign up for the two at once, you get a little bit of a discounting on the price. And it was something that I looked into because I'm curious about the traditions. You know, you hear a lot of arguments in the witch community about, you know, can you truly be a witch if you're solitary? Which, yes, absolutely, you can be. And I'm here to tell you that for a fact. And I'm sure you can attest to that as well. But
absolutely,
there is something to be said for having a foundation in tradition and having other witches that you're close with that are a family to you, on which you can, 1, rely, 2, draw energy with, and 3, learn from. And so I was curious. So when you said right now that you would not have gotten as much out of it if you had been a new witch, you would not recommend doing the online for someone who's new to the craft?
No.
Talk to me about why. Why wouldn't you do that? What was it that made it so...
Because when you're accepted into the classes, and to me, let me start off by saying, to me, Lori Cabot is the gold standard of modern witchcraft in America, and someone who I just, you know, adore, respect. She's phenomenal. There's everything you may ever hear good about Lori is so true. So I don't think either that I would, if I would have been a new witch though, I don't think that I would have gone and done it in person either. And here's why. Because when you're stepping into this, because it is so intensive, Lori is not there to spoon feed you basic witchcraft. This is something that you need to have a solid foundation of practice on your own, so that when you do go into these classes, you're just like a sponge. You're just soaking in everything. you're not having any problems with learning. So
let's talk about that for a second, because that's a very interesting point. So what you're saying is that working with Lori, she has a fantastic energy. I think you can feel that off of her just in listening to her in interviews and watching her on YouTube, and the other people, the people she has around her. When you look at the people like Alexander and Bree and Penny and the people that she draws around her, they draw such an energy. They themselves have energy. And I have, through Facebook, become friends with many of these people. And we've had conversations and dialogues that have been so enriching to me that I hadn't really felt the need to be part of a coven either. But I'm curious about the relationship, because they seem to be very tight. And I've never melded well with a group, which is part of the reason why I stay solitary. And and as you know, here in Texas, I mean, there's still a large group. I mean, honestly, I've never had a problem up here with anybody, you know, having an issue with my being a witch, other than my husband, who has some issues with it now and then. You know, it's not consistent, and that's what drives me crazy. But most of what I've found up here really recently has been very open and kind of curious about it. But there are, you know, as you know, I have a speech pathology practice. So I try to keep that separate from my purple broom, or separate from my religious practices. I don't, you know, have pentacles hanging about my office in the therapy space. Now, my personal office has all of my witchy stuff in it now. So, you know, I mean, my large crystal balls there, Lucille, and I have my Bessa hanging up. I have two of them. You know, I have my staff. I have all of my altars, all of that stuff. So, you know, I find that people are more curious about it than they are derogatory, for the most part. You know, they kind of will look at it askance, and either they don't say anything at all or they ask me questions.
Right.
But going back to talking about, you know, being part of a cohesive group, you know, there are covens up here, but I have had a difficult time, until I met you, connecting with other witches in the area. We have Lady Grave Dancer from YouTube, who is a well-known on the YouTube circuit, and she lives down in Garland, and I've been to her home a few times, and we've done some circles together, and, you know, she's wonderful. She has a great energy, but she's very busy, and, you know, Garland sometimes feels like a million miles away from Aubrey. So, you know, and you're probably about an hour and a half to 2 hour drive from me. So you're not far, but you're not super close. It's not like we can just say, hey, let's go grab lunch today. So that leads me to the, you know, to the, okay, well, first point that you brought up was saying that, you know, you needed to have a good foundation in witchcraft before taking Lori's course, and that you wouldn't even take it in person as a new witch. Is it because it's of its intensiveness, or is it because of just a general lack of the craft itself? And Lori kind of expects people to come to her with at least a foundational knowledge already. Is that your take on it then?
Yes, and here's why. Lori has a book, The Book of Shadows, okay? And everything that you do in Witchcraft 1, Witchcraft 2, and Witchcraft 3 is this Book of Shadows. And so I had bought it quite a while before I was able to take the class. It was still part of my manifestation process that I do. And so, you know, I was able to read these things, and some of the things that I didn't understand, because it was part of the Cabot tradition. When I took the class, you know, it was clear. I think that as
Patsy,
a new witch,
Patsy, you're going to hate me, but I totally forgot that I'm supposed to go pick my daughter up from one store and take her to the other.
That's okay. We can do this again.
I had to take a brief break there, so I apologize. But what I was asking you about was, you were saying that the course is very intensive, and so it's as if Lori expects you to come to the class with some foundational understanding of the basics of witchcraft. So what I wanted to ask you about is, what was the what was the class actually like? You know how, like, sometimes when you take an online course, you've got print materials that you read and you take quizzes, and then you know, you might have a test at the end. And I'm certain it's probably nothing like that, especially if it's that intense. But if it is that intense, then how do they do it online? How is it that you can get what you need from that intense of a class? See what I'm saying?
It's being broadcast online as the live class is being done. And I'll tell you, I felt an instant connection, Tori. And taking it online, I mean, she imbues you with magic, period. That's the best way to say it. And I felt, I'm quite sure, the same goosebumps and magic and just, oh my goodness, that I would have had I been in there in person. So
you do feel it was a good experience. I mean, you would definitely recommend it to somebody else that's far away.
Excuse me,
because the next thing I wanted to talk with you about is, what is it like? I mean, do you still consider yourself a solitary, or do you consider yourself a Cabot witch of the Salem tradition? Or do you kind of consider both?
I'm a Cabot witch of the Salem tradition.
Okay.
Because my practice completely is in the Cabot tradition now.
Okay.
And so, so when I do my own rituals at home, I do that strictly according to Cabot tradition.
Okay, now here that brings me to another question, because you know, around here, being is that we are so far from Salem, and we're even kind of far from Nolens. I mean, we're not, you know, horribly far, but it's at least a 6-hour drive to New Orleans from here, maybe a little further even. And so it's not like we can just hop, skip, and jump over to a circle, or, you know, get someone to help us with raising energy, or, you know, and like I said, I know that there are covens around here, but they tend to keep themselves apparently very quiet, because I've never had anyone approach me. I've thought about starting a coven of my own. But, you know, then comes up the whole question of, well, who gives you authority? What's your tradition? You know, did you go through your three degrees and all of that? Now, here's the crazy thing about that. And you and I were talking about this on the phone the other night. And that's why I wanted to kind of interview you, because I think we've got a lot of kind of similar perspectives on things. But it's a unique perspective, because we do live, like it or not, lots of North Texas is still very rural. Especially up here in Denton County and down there in Corsicana where you are. So, you know, those areas are still very spread out. I think a lot of people that live in other parts of the country don't understand how spread out it is here. It can take me 45 minutes to a couple of hours to get from here to Garland, even though we're all in the same Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex. So to even go see Tequila takes, you know, at least an hour drive, depending on the traffic. And the traffic up here has gotten so bad. It literally takes 45 minutes to, you know, half an hour to 45 minutes to get 10 miles down the road, literally, from FM 423 traveling west on 380 to my neighborhood. It can take up to 45 minutes to an hour just to make that, you know, 5 to 10 mile stretch. And it's really bad. So the opportunity to get together to do ritual with others or to raise energy with others is sometimes a little hard to come by. So my question is, considering that you consider yourself a Cabot witch, do you feel that you're drawing on their energies in your personal rituals? Do you feel like as a coven, their energies are automatically lent to you for that purpose? Or, you know, are you able to communicate with them and say, hey, I'm going to be doing a ritual at this time. It's going to be this time where you are. Do you think you could help me raise energy? Yeah. How does that work for you?
Well, that's a very good question, actually. I have always felt that I could draw on the energies without having to ask them for help, because we're all so close to each other. There's many other witches Cabot witches that do not live in or around Salem. For instance, I have a brother witch that lives in LA, and there's a one of our elders lives in California as well.
That's so, all the way on the other side of the country.
Yes,
for sure.
It is. Wow. Yes, okay. It is. So, you know, there are people, and even Alexander, you know how he traveled. I mean,
oh,
he's
gosh,
a
yes.
world traveler.
He's all over the place. India.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, yes, yes. And so I feel like I'm very close to several of the high priests, the elder priestesses, the elders. As you know, I'm admin in the Fae ministry group there, which I love. It's a huge honor. And Jackie, I don't want to mispronounce her last name, but Belanger. Sorry, Jackie.
Is it Ballinger, maybe?
Yeah. Maybe it's Belanger.
Yeah, I think that's Ballinger.
Okay, I've never heard it pronounced because everyone just, I'm treated no differently than if I lived in Salem.
Now that was going to be my next question.
Yes.
I'm glad you touched on that because that's my thing is I don't. My husband just pulled up, so we may have to do this in three parts.
Okay.
I'm going to have to learn how to interject music in the middle of these. But before he parks the truck and walks in the door, that was going to be my next question is, you know, is it different for you? Like, do you feel awkward when you end up going to Salem for ritual or do you feel welcomed right away? You know, is the experience different?
I feel like I'm home.
I feel like you're home. Yeah.
The moment that the driver brought us from Boston Logan to Salem from the B&B that we stayed in, oof, bad idea on that one. But I knew exactly how to get to the wharf and how to get to the shop in Channing. My kids will tell you, my daughter will tell you that I'm so geographically
Patsy,
challenged.
Let me get back with you. I'll call you right back.
Okay.
For the multiple interruptions, at some point I'm going to learn how to edit and put in music in between the interruptions.
That would be cool. So, yeah.
Okay.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, well, you know, it'd be great if I could just sit down and, you know, record a podcast like this without like 6 tons of interruptions. But folks, I have a life. I've got dogs.
You are one busy lady.
I've got a business. I've got kids. I've got a husband that, you know, likes coming to make farting noises in the background. So, you know, it's one of those things. So I won't tell you what he does sometimes when I'm recording the videos for Witches of the Moon because let's just put it this way. Sometimes I just have to re-record the video because he'll walk by the door butt naked. And I'm like, really? Really? You know, or he'll come in and go, look at this, you know, and cut it. Well, never mind. Anyway. Oh, God.
That's TMI. Hysterical.
TMI. Okay. So that was my question was, you know, when you show up at Salem, say, like, had you ever been to Salem before you went for the initiation?
No. And okay. It was actually, I went for Litha at Midsummer in 2018. And no, I had been to Boston, but that was back when I was still working as a nurse and was a research nurse and was sent there on a study trip. And so I really regretted not going.
I have never been to the East Coast at all, except for Florida. I mean, I've been to Florida.
Yeah.
But, you know, my parents, we didn't travel a lot as kids. I was born in Colorado. I was born in Denver. And we would come down to San Antonio, where my mom's parents lived, for vacations once a year. But by the time I was, you know, 6 years old, we had moved from Denver to San Antonio. And, you know, so traveling in terms of, you know, we didn't take a lot of big family trips like that. So I never got to go to the East Coast. I have never been to New England at all. So the experience of being able to go and participate, I'm sure, is something that's vastly different than your private ritual at home.
Yes. Yes, it is, in that you are Jackie also leads the ritual, and if you can ask and request to be, if there's any openings, to re request to have a part in the ritual. And so, when I went, I mean, she had already given me the part of the sweeper, which was wonderful. Now, this time, which I'm staying, as you know, 10 days at the end of next month. I'm not sure that there's going to be, a open part in the ritual, but we still put on our robes, everyone. We stand up, in the area where the tables and everything are, away from the area where the altar is and everyone that's participating in it. And we stand there and we literally, do the ritual with them that are conducting it. And anyone who goes, you don't have to be a witch to go or to participate. And that it's a public ritual. And it's just wonderful because so many people came up and was introducing themselves to me. And it was like, oh.
I feel like
So,
you've come home, huh? Because
yeah, I
that
felt
was
that way
something else I wanted to
immediately.
bring up, because this was something that my husband had an absolute fascination with, is, well, do you all do rituals sky clad? And to hear him say that, was hilarious. I was like, well, me personally, when I'm doing my ritual, I'm usually sky clad, but that's by
Right.
my choice. But I'm solitary. If
Right.
I was with a group of people, there is no way on the planet I would subject anyone to that.
Oh, you're so funny. But
You know what I
no,
mean? It's just that for
it's
me,
done as
my personal ritual, it helps me to feel like I'm one with nothing between me and the god goddess. But
yes.
I cannot honestly say that I would even, be comfortable with that. And so he was like, well, are you sky clad under your robes? And I was like, well, I know in some cases some people do that, but I would not be comfortable in a public setting like that. So I'm assuming that everybody is fully clothed and is not sky clad because it's open to
Right.
the public. Everyone has robes, but the robes are worn over clothing.
Yes,
And, you
over
know,
black clothing. Lori asked us all to wear something nice that's all black. And then for the public that attends, this is the way that I was told, and it's really the best way, I think, to like when my ex-husband went with me. Jackie was the one who told me that you will dress like nice for church on Sunday. And I'm like, okay, I'm vaguely familiar with that, but no. So
very familiar with
my
that because I was raised Church Christ. So yeah, that was a must-have
like we were
kind of thing
talking
going.
about. Yeah. So my husband, ex-husband, took his suit and he looked very nice. And it's actually a really nice thing. You go in and you're there in whatever clothing that you chose to wear. And then Jackie will tell you what time Lori wants everyone in their robe. And that's all the cabinet witches. You don't have to be participating in the ritual. And so we all the ladies go in the ladies' room and we help each other get the robes on and everything, and then the guys do the same thing, and we come out, and then we, because that way, she likes for the public to be able to know who the cabinet witches are, but they're so close to everyone there, and I mean, other witches, like I said, even non-witches, that want to attend. That you already know everyone on Facebook, although you hadn't met them. And it was just amazing how many people came up and introduced themselves to me.
Well, I
And
think
it was.
it's also neat that they open that to the public because, again, out here, Salem is a unique kind of crucible, so to speak,
Yes.
well, the history and everything that's there,
Yes.
okay, versus here in the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
I know that a
Yeah.
lot of people like the Denton Universalist Unitarian Church does public open rituals, but I've never attended because one, I don't know any of the people, even through
Right.
Facebook. I don't think I know anyone that does ritual at the Denton quote unquote church that's there. I know where it is. I've been past the building several times, and it's easy to get to. It's just not, again, I'm solitary, and I'm solitary for a reason.
Right.
I don't gel well with a group, which has been one of the reasons why I've been very hesitant to join a coven of any kind. The other reason that I didn't go was that, I don't know what to expect at the ritual, how
Right.
they do it, because everybody has their own way of doing things, right? So let me ask you this. When you join a coven, here's my thing. As a solitary, I work with the Morrigan. She is my goddess.
Yes.
I feel very drawn to the Morrigan. I realized after a time that she'd really been calling me my entire life, and it just didn't, I didn't know it at the time. But looking back, I see things that were signs. Like I had this wonderful book called The Hounds of the Morrigan. And in that book, she's actually the bad guy.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I was very drawn to her as a character. I kind of liked her. She was fascinating to me. And my fascination for blackbirds and the fact that I've always felt very drawn to them, and they've always followed me around. And like one time I worked at a dayhab around the corner from where I live, and I came out one day from the dayhab, and one of the workers came out with me, and my car was covered in grackles and ravens and crows, and everybody else's car was sitting parked right next to mine just fine. And he looked at me and he goes, "Well, they really like you." And I was like, yeah, I think they do.
Yes.
But it's one of those things that when you join a coven, I know many of the covens work with Hecate. Now, I don't think personally there's a lot of difference between Hecate and the Morrigan. And I know there's people out there screaming at their computers and phones and stuff right now, but it's true, because in my personal belief, and this is only my opinion, but I think that there's one male deity energy, one female deity energy, and that energy makes itself known to different people in different cultures at different times and seasons and in different ways that we can relate to or may need. So, just because I work with the Morrigan now doesn't mean that Hecate doesn't sometimes appear in a dream to me. And I do think that that has a message for me. And
Yes.
I think that sometimes she comes to us as the nurturing Caridwen, or Isis, or, some other female deity that we can then relate
Right.
to, because that's what we need. That's the energy we need at that point in time. And the same thing with the male energy, the god. So my hesitation too with certain covens is that, are you required to work with a specific deity or recognize the authority of a specific deity?
No, but what made it really nice for me was that I had already been, ancient Egyptian and working with Isis as my matron, my primary. There's actually they Lori does as well, and many people there do as well. And I was also have always worked with Celtic deities as well. And one of the things that I really enjoyed, and I don't feel that I'm losing out any of that, was when you're an eclectic solitaire, you are able to choose your deities out of whatever pantheon you choose. And
right.
I don't feel that I have lost any one bit of that with becoming
by being
a habit witch.
Okay.
Yeah, not at all. And
no.
At the Morrigan, a lot of the habits, me as well, work with the Morrigan. And
well, I see the Morrigan and the Hecate and even the Isis energy very similarly. personally. I mean, you know, Isis is a little more of a mother nurturing type goddess, but she was also had a fearsome side to her, you know, as the bringer of the process of mummification and so forth. And, you know, I see Hecate and the Morrigan there, both, you know, battle goddesses, triple goddesses, considered quote unquote dark goddesses, which I find interesting. And it's the same with the Indian goddess. My mind is blank. Kali, yes, thank you. To me, that's like all one energy just making itself known to different cultures in slightly different ways. But it's good to know that that doesn't go away, that you're not required, you know, to do anything. So let me ask you about the infamous rule of three, because here's my take on the rule of three. I know that the Cabots follow the rule of three because I've seen it in the creed, because I was a paid member of the temple for 2 years. I will probably renew at some point just because I liked having that. And it is tax deductible, folks, but it's only $30. So it's not much, but it does make you feel like you're part of something bigger, which I think is important. But, you know, I don't get to go and participate in the rituals and all of that. Which I think would be wonderful at some point to be able to do. But, you know, my hesitation in really being involved in anything like that is that I do not follow the rule of three. I don't necessarily, I don't want to say that I don't, well, I don't believe in the rule of three the way that it's taught. Let me put it that way.
Right.
My opinion is such that, you know, I look at physics and I do believe that what you put out, you get back. And that has sounds very law of attraction, but for me, it's more physics. When you stand in a pond and you throw a rock into the pond, you know, if you were on a boat and you threw a rock into the pond, the waves would ripple out from the boat, but eventually they're going to hit the shore and come back to you. Now, when it comes back to you, it's attenuated. It's not as strong as when it was sent out from you, but it does come back to you, which is why you're able to trace magic back to people. When someone does something, you're able to trace it back through that tether, through that ripple back to the source, but it's attenuated and you can always put up a barrier to keep that from coming to you. So I don't necessarily believe the rule of three in terms of what you do comes back to you threefold. Now, I have a friend who has an interesting take on the threefold law, and her threefold view was she believes in the threefold law, but she doesn't think it comes back to you three times as strong. She thinks it comes back to you in three aspects: physical, emotional, and spiritual. That I can see. That I could understand.
That's an interesting concept.
Well, exactly. But do you follow the rule of three? Is that how strongly is that stressed in the Cabot tradition?
Well, it is part of the Cabot code of ethics. And so, you know, I do adhere to everything in the code of ethics. You know, and that was kind of different a bit, you know, but it wasn't hard to. It wasn't that different than what I was already practicing, but they go by that, and if it harm none, do what you will.
So
you know, that's, I think.
Now that part of it, I don't mind so much. It's just that I know that there are certain people who are considered leaders in the community who do not believe in doing any kind of like binding spells, mirror spells, you know, return to sender type spells. And I don't want to mention any names, but it is a person for whom I have a great deal of respect because I've read several of his books. But I disagree highly with that because I don't see that as maledictive. I see that as simply reflecting back what they're sending to you. So if, you know, they're going to get their own medicine back to them and it allows them to reflect on what they're doing while not affecting you, it's more a defense mechanism for yourself because it's bouncing back from you and not affecting you. It's going back to where it was sent. And to me, that's not that's not really maledictive. Just like a mirror spell, you're not, you know, doing anything bad to the person. You're just having the person take a look at themselves. Now, if they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing, or they're, you know, they're being made to reconsider their actions, I don't consider that a bad or maledictive working. So I'm kind of curious as to what a Cabot would say when presented with a position such as that.
Well, in my practice and with my understanding, you know, all witches are, that I would know, they're going to do spells to protect themselves, to protect loved ones, especially if you're doing that kind of work, such as tarot or anything like that, you know, for the public.
Right. For sure.
You know, you're going to do spells of protection. You're going to do binding spells. You're going to do all kinds of blessings. So I don't think that when you are doing something that is to protect yourself and other people, I do not see that as being, you know, something
negative or maledictive either.
Absolutely.
So I think we share a similar view on that, because, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not saying that I would never, ever, because I never say I would never, ever, because the minute you say you never, ever, you're going to end up doing it. But yes. Curse or hex someone, I don't see the necessity in that. I choose to use my energy in a different manner that's, you know, going to positively affect me. Because if I'm angry at someone, because see, it's just like when you discipline a child. You know, I believe in spanking. I was spanked as a kid. Some kids, they don't respond to timeout. My kids did not respond to timeout. They responded to a swat on the butt. They understood.
Right.
So, but yeah. I never did it when I was angry. And here's where my mentor for my PhD program, she was very much a do not ever spank your kids kind of person. And she and I had a serious discussion about this. And she's like, do you think your kids understand that, you know, what they've done wrong? I said, yes, they do. And I know they do, because I sit them down and I tell them, hey, look, here's the deal. What did I tell you? You said if right. I did this, I was going to get a spanking. And what did you do? I did this. So what's the consequence of your action? I'm going to get a spanking. Okay, so do you understand why you're getting a spanking? Yes, I do. Okay, so bend over and three good swats on the butt. And that was it. That's all it took. And so it's kind of the same thing. I mean, I don't see the point in, you know, I never spanked my kids out of anger. I would always send them to their room and I would calm down. I don't do magic in anger, because that results in one bad, ineffective magic, bad results, and it's going to come back to you.
Oh, yes.
So yes, when I do something, I make sure I'm at a calm place. So I choose to use my energies more positively to boost myself, boost people around them, you know, and maybe detract from whatever they're sending out negatively and send it back to them, so that they're getting a taste of their own medicine rather than, you know, cursing or hexing. I just don't see the point to that at this point, unless you're like, really, like if somebody was to murder my child, well, then I might you might find me doing something. You know, I did have a young man that my daughter had taken up with. The funny thing was, he was Johnny Cash's great grandson. And this young man was horribly abusive to my daughter, more so than I knew. And it turns out that, come to find out, he had been kicked out of his parents' house for making a threat against his parents, saying he was going to bring home a gun and shoot them all and shoot everybody.
Oh.
So his stepdad kicked him out of the house. Well, where do you think he ended up? Unbeknownst to me. My house. She would sneak him in after work and sneak him upstairs. And, you know, I had gone upstairs several times, but she had him somehow out of sight, out of mind. I don't know if he was up in the attic or what, but I suspected. So I would try to like sneak up there, and I never could ever catch him. But she did confess to me later that, you know, he was threatening her, telling her that if she didn't give him a place to stay, he was going to kill us all. So it really, really scared her. So, you can bet that there was some magic done to get that young man out of her life. and it took a little bit of working, but we did finally do it. There was something very negative attached to that young man. And I don't think he was bad in the core of his heart, but he had had a traumatic childhood and his mother was not what I would consider a model. So, you know, it was not going to be a good relationship for either one of them. So I was glad to see that one in, but I did do some workings to send that young man on his own way because I did not want him around my kid. You know, at one point he pushed her down and she had to have 16 stitches in her knee. So that was going to cease and desist. So, you know, I'm glad to see that the idea there is not that you can't take measures to protect yourself, because that was one area where I really differed from this one individual. Now, speaking of that, I did want to ask you, you had mentioned to me that you had also gone through the Temple of Witchcraft, at least a couple of their courses. How do their courses differ from Lori's?
Okay, I'm sorry. I must have said something wrong or misspoken. I'm friends on Facebook with Christopher Penzack and then with you know, several of the other witches.
Oh, that, okay. I probably misunderstood that. Well, I thought you said you had taken one or two of his classes, his levels as well, because they're different than Lori's, right? Lori just has the standard three, but she makes it very intensive. And then he's got like 12, doesn't he?
Right. Something like that. Yeah, his classes go longer as well. But, you know, Christopher, when he was a young man, I believe a teenager, he met Lori Cabot, and she taught him, and they have been very, very, very close, because, you know, he is, like we talked about the other day, he is, has such magnificent energies.
Yeah, that's what Lady Grave Dancer was saying when some of the witches from here went out to meet some of our Facebook friends out in Salem. They went out to Salem for Samhain, and she said she was, you know, standing outside of a shop, and she said she felt him before she saw him. She's like, all of a sudden she felt this like super positive energy, and she was like, who is that? And then Christopher Pinchett comes walking down the street, and she goes, that's who it is. And then a couple of days later, she was in a shop, and she felt him again, and sure enough, he come walking by, and she was like, man, you can feel him. It was just this... Yes. Positive, just glowing energy coming off this guy. And I was like, well, this is somebody I got to meet.
I'll tell you about his personality from what I've seen, which has just been, I'm like, so honored. I had sent him a friend request, a few years back, whatever. And he had so many friends that he couldn't accept anymore.
Right.
But he told me that whenever he was able to add more, he would. Well, you know, such a magnificent person and everything that is Christopher Penzack. And he still, he and Penny Cabot still are contributors to the books that Lori writes. So... And, but anyway, he did. He sent me the loveliest email and told me he had added me as a friend. I am like a little girl looking at,
squeal.
You know, their idol. I squealed. When Christopher Penzack likes or loves one of your posts, it's like,
you just light up, do you? See, that's how I feel about Alexander.
Yes,
I have like a little witchy crush. Yay! Alexander liked my post. Huzzah!
He is one of the most. I haven't met him yet, but he, you know, we'll be meeting them both.
Oh, I was going to say, we're so in Arlington. Hey, for all of my listeners out there on this podcast, let me tell you, if you are in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, come around Beltane. You need to get yourself down to Arlington. I don't have the deets yet, but when I do, I'll make sure to post it somewhere. But yeah, he and Lady Rhea are going to be here, and Patsy, you and I are so there. I cannot wait.
Yes, ma'am.
I wrote the shop owner because he friended me on Facebook, because originally what had happened was I asked, you know, what's it going to take to get you guys to come to Texas? And Alexander said, well, get in touch with this gentleman, Kevin, and, you know, talk to him because he's got a shop in Arlington. Well, I knew about the Enchanted Forest down in Fort Worth, but I did not know about the one in Arlington. So I wrote Kevin. Kevin friended me on Facebook, and he's supposed to be pulling in the details. So I emailed him and asked him if he had any further details, and he did not yet. So, but as soon as we've got those, I will let everybody know, because I cannot wait to get my book signed by her too. And I'm very excited about getting to see Matt Arn. Not next weekend. Harold was like, it's not this weekend, Natalie. It's next weekend. This weekend's the 29th. And I was like, oh, snap. So, but in 2 weeks, Matt Arn's going to be at Witch Fest in Austin. And Patsy, you and I are so there as well. So he's got some great books. Well, let me direct the conversation this way, because I know that you've got things that you've got to do, and I'm going to have to go. And I don't know if y'all can hear my dog in the background, but he's like, I had to put him in his crate because he's like all over the place. And now he's whining like a 2-year-old. It's getting close to their dinner time. So it's like having 7 furry toddlers in the house. But what I was going to ask about was the opportunities that you have had to get together with the Cabots. You said they've been very, very welcoming, and you've enjoyed that. So how do you connect with people here? I mean, do you find that most of your witchy connections are through Facebook or YouTube or some other sort of social media? Or do you actually have witches that you meet up with regularly that you just even just to get lunch, just to sit and talk about witchy kinds of things?
No, I don't. And I was very excited when you and I became friends. And there's another witch friend, Scott Perry, that lives in Denton. And
he's only about 15 miles to my west.
And he's such a wonderful guy. And he sent me the info on WitchyCon as well.
Yes.
And you probably saw I posted earlier about us getting together and going
I've already gotten my tickets for WitchyCon. That's October 3rd. That's also a Saturday. And I have applied to be a presenter there. I'm hoping to put on a 1-hour workshop that's going to be based on my upcoming book. I don't want to give out too many details because, you know, I think when you put too much of your work out there before you're done with it, people can come along and sabotage it it sounds paranoid, I know, but I don't want any negativity being geared towards my work, because this means a lot to me. But I am hoping to be selected as a presenter. They're supposed to let everybody know by May 1st. But I'm super excited about that.
I wanted to let you know that, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Sorry. Wanted to let you know also that I would love to volunteer for you and be your like little assistant person at the side.
Awesome.
And I'm not going to get up there with you, but I will like make
sure. Well, I can get
that,
you to stand there and sell the books, because I plan to bring copies of the book once it's out to sell at the talk, so that if people want to pick up a copy of the book afterwards, they can. And if they want me to sign it, I can. This is my first time doing anything like that. I mean, I've presented for speech pathology before because, you know, clearly, I mean, that's what I've been doing for the last 20 years. But into the spiritual realm, it's something that's new for me. So I've never presented on a witchy side of thing other than doing Witches of the Moon. And I do have a class on Udemy, and I'm trying to work on another class for the Udemy platform. But in terms of like presenting in front of a group of people, this will be the first time I've ever done anything like that. So that would be awesome to have at least a moral support and a sister there to give me some boosting. So let me ask you this then. Here's where I wanted to kind of get into some new kinds of things with you that I don't think you and I have talked about in the past. In terms of, you know, once you initiated your second degree level into the Cabot tradition, did you stop there in terms of you didn't look towards any other traditions? Like, you're not interested in the ash, birch, and willow that Raven Grimassi and Stephanie Taylor had, or you weren't really looking at Christopher's program at the Temple of Witchcraft anymore? It just wasn't an interest for you, or you didn't feel you needed it, or it was just something you didn't need. Were there other things that were maybe not so witchy, but maybe more shamanistic? Because I know Christopher Penchik has a big background in shamanic traditions. I think he's trained in several shamanic traditions. Mm-hmm. I myself am initiated into the Munai Ki. So mm-hmm. I don't consider that particularly witchy. It's shamanistic. It's a Native American, but it's not Native American from the North America. It's Native American. We're talking from Peru. So it was interesting because to see the similarities in the religious practices was very eye-opening. the four quarters and the recognizing the deities as guardians of the four quarters and that kind of thing, it was very interesting. But I felt I gained a lot out of that religious study, you know, and that initiation. But I'm interested in learning more because I think that I could go through all of them, but I know if I remember correctly, and Stephanie, if you're listening out there, you please feel free to correct me, but I do believe one of the reasons that I chose not to do the ash, birch, and willow or to apply to that, to be selected in, because I think you're selected. I don't think you can just sign up. You have to express an interest and they have to accept you. But the reason that I didn't was because they don't want you to study any other traditions. They feel you need to devote yourself to one tradition. Now, I understand why Raven says that, but this goes back to the conversation you and I were having the other night about how I don't like to narrow that. You know, I don't like to get locked into one person or one group of people's dogma, because that's one of the reasons I became a witch in the first place, was I was tired of being told what I was supposed to believe. And I understand his viewpoint that you need a foundation and that there should be a foundation to witchcraft, and that too much eclecticism, you know, kind of lends to not having, it's like you've got all the puzzle pieces, but you can't figure out the picture. And I understand what he's saying. And I get that. And to an extent, I agree, but I also disagree, because I think if it's part of who you are and it's naturally there for you and you're inclined to that path, it's going to be made known to you by the god and goddess. Those pieces are going to come together for you regardless. But I also understand what he's saying, that, you know, a lot of people read different things out of different books and they try to mishmash stuff and then want to know why it doesn't work for them. I don't think it doesn't work for them because they're mishmashing a lot of different teachings, because I think there's something to be learned from multiple cultures and multiple paths. I think that it doesn't work for them because they're half-assing it, if that makes sense. They're not putting the true visualization and their heart and their soul and their real belief into it. They're kind of saying, well, this is supposed to work, so I'm going to do this. But I liked the way this sounded, so I'm going to do that too. Instead of saying, this is why I'm doing these two things, and really putting it together and synthesizing it, that I think is where they fall apart. So I kind of wanted your take on that. Have you ever initiated into any other traditions, or do you have an interest in, or do you just feel like you've come home with the Cabot tradition and that's kind of where you're planning to put in your stock?
Well, yes.
We never stop learning, right? I mean,
in terms of that, staying with the Cabot tradition, yes. But in terms of taking classes, such as I am going to be taking some classes with Christopher, because he has a lot of other classes that are for all witches.
Right. So, I know his tradition is one that says they don't care if you are studying other traditions at the same time, which was one of the things I liked about it, because I think that comes from Christopher's background too, knowing that he has studied with a lot of different people and he has learned a lot of different things and a lot of different, you know, not necessarily witchy traditions, but shamanic traditions.
Right.
And I think he draws on all of that. He's very good. I think Christopher's gift is synthesizing the various different viewpoints and beliefs and types of magical practice. And I think he does that seamlessly and beautifully. And I definitely think that that's it. So you've not actually been initiated into any other traditions, but you're not against taking other classes.
Well, no. Like, there are... I'm sure you're familiar with Armid Astrid and Virginia Villarreal, and they are, I'm sorry, I do forget the, they're more than a third or fourth degree. I'm sorry, ladies, you know I love you. Then they're right outside of Houston, and okay. They teach the classes. Christopher has, you know, made them teachers a very long time ago. And right. They're such lovely ladies. I have an open invitation to go. And believe me, you know, I'm going to be calling you. yes, ma'am.
Looking forward to that. I got family down around Houston, so it'll be nice. My uncle worked for NASA, so they live down there in the Clear Lake area. So it'd be nice to see them again. They're getting up there. So.
And they have different events, just different things like that. And so they have a lovely area where, you know, you could camp out. So, you know, that's something that I'm most definitely in my future, because I can't wait to meet them. Like I said, it's been very, very lovely to me. And so, you know, I believe that any witch that, you know, is following their tradition, because that's what they choose and want over anything else, as long as they are adhering to the code of ethics, then, you know, and if you don't
learning know other means and ways is not necessarily a bad thing, right?
No, and the elders are always available to call or send a message to on Facebook to ask questions. And that's really wonderful for me when I'm not there.
Right.
So, I
think that's one of the things that I have really loved about this particular community, is that the approachability of people who are perceived as leaders in the community. Matt Aron friended me, actually. I didn't friend him, and that was a shock to me. And I'm glad now I accepted it, because at first I was like, I don't know this person, you know, and I'm not big on accepting people I don't know. But I am so glad I did, because I have learned so much from him, and his new book, Psychic Witch, is a gem. That is absolutely phenomenal. I am so glad he wrote that book. It's about time somebody wrote a book like that. But also Timothy Roderick, I told you the other night that, you know, when Tequila, Lady Grave Dancer, she's the one who started the first year and a day group on Facebook. And my cousin, who is known in the witch community as Sunshine Morning Ray, she asked Timothy if he would participate, because they wanted people studying the book to be able to ask him questions, and he accepted. And through that group, he and I became friends, and that has been such a rich friendship. He's the one that encouraged me to self-publish my books, which I did, the first two. I'm hoping I can actually get this next one published through a publishing house, but if I can't, I'll self-publish it, and it's not a problem.
Right.
But you know, I don't feel that I got any less out of the first two degrees with him than I did if I had studied under with a coven, because his books were very exhaustive, and like the formatting between the two years was very, very different. The first year and a day book, he had daily studies, things you were supposed to do daily. And I was posting weekly videos talking about the week's studies and how I'd done them and what they did for me and what have you. But the second year book was laid out very differently. It was done in a lunation. So from moon cycle to moon cycle versus having you know, daily studies. And I think he did the second year because, one, it's more intense. It gets a little deeper into the craft. You talk about some of the seals of Solomon and that kind of thing, and some other, you know, deeper magical practices. Whereas the first year was more about learning the basics of the major arcana of tarot, learning to meditate, learning what it means to be a witch and have a nature-based religion, and learning to connect to the goddess energy and the god energy and finding that within yourself. And that's more what that first year was about. So those daily practices were very important, I felt, in the first year. And I worked very hard to keep them. The parts I had the hardest with were the days of silence, because we're so connected you know, via YouTube and Facebook and your phone and everything else. And being that I'm a business owner and a mom, and, you know, I had to be available. So it was very hard for me to keep the actual days of silence. But I would definitely try. I mean, I would turn it off. You know, I put on the do not disturb on my phone, except for, you know, the business line. So if people and my family, so if they needed to reach me, they could, but I wasn't being distracted. I didn't turn on the radio in the car. I talked only what was necessary for my work, and I didn't make small talk with anybody that day, you know, and I did try to really take in those practices. So when I initiated after that first year, my heart and soul, that was a true initiation. That to me was a completion of the first degree. And the same thing with the second year book. I mean, I led a second year group on Facebook, and they're still on there. So if anybody wants to join, just hunt it down. We use the covers of Timothy's two books for the cover photo for the groups, but just, you know, or look me up and then, you know, let me know and I can add you to the group, because all of my videos are still posted there. So if anybody listening is interested in that, just hunt me down on Facebook and let me know that you want to be added to those groups. And by all means, I recommend Timothy's books, because if you're solitary or you're spread out like we are, and you don't have the opportunity to join in a tradition like you normally like, you know, Timothy comes from a tradition out of California, and his writings are based on their teachings. But the third year book was getting tricky for him because he, you know, you're oath bound to keep certain coven secrets. Yeah. And I understand that. There are certain teachings and traditions that are not to be shared outside the coven, and I get that. But at the same time, he's trying to provide a book for people who are in solitary practice to be able to. And I also did Raymond Buckland's book, Big Blue. Mm-hmm. That was my first ever book on witchcraft that I owned, that I studied. And I completed that entire book in like 6 months' time. And according to Dr. Buckland, if you complete the exercises, which I did, I mean, I had a diary. I was keeping all my information in. I was doing all the meditations, everything like that. And I probably went through it in record time, but it's because it felt so natural to me. But he says that that's the equivalent of a third degree, you know, education. So teachings, you know. So I feel like I have achieved at least that level. But you're never not learning, right?
Right.
Which there's always more to be learned.
I love the most about witchcraft is it never gets monotonous, and you're learning something new all
there's
the time.
Always something new. And even when you go back to the basics, you're like, man, I forgot how good that feels to just sit down and do a 10-minute grounding, you know?
Yes.
And that's one of the things that I loved about, I think, Matt's new book, is that the grounding exercises, the meditations he has in there, those exercises are absolutely phenomenal. And when you do them, you're like, man, I forgot how good it feels to just sit down and do this, because you literally feel that shift in the energy. You feel that shift in the state of consciousness. And, you know, you go back and you go back to your basics and you're like, man, this is great. So, well, Patsy, I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today and introduce you to everybody else that's out there. So obviously you're on Facebook. So if people have questions, are they able to contact you and
Absolutely. Talk
with you more?
Yeah, and everyone's welcome to send me a friend request or, you know, if they want to contact me through Messenger. So
awesome.
Absolutely.
I do very much appreciate your time. So I'm going to stop the recording here.